Welcome to Body Matters Podcast, where we bring to you raw and inspiring content on all things to do with body positivity and eating disorder recovery.
But before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people as traditional people and traditional owners of this country. We acknowledge with gratitude First Nations communities for their continuing care and connection to the lands or waters with which they have protected for thousands of years. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize that First Nations sovereignty was never ceded.
Thanks for coming on the podcast, Joss.
Thanks for having me.
So would you be able to provide a little background information about yourself and maybe talk about some things that you do to stay well?
Yeah, so I'm a provisional psychologist here at Body Matters, soon to be fully registered. I'm originally from New Zealand, but I've been in Australia for almost 13 years. Initially, I was in Adelaide, but I moved to Sydney a couple of years ago for my master's degree. To stay well, I'd include taking my dogs for a walk or to the beach, catching up with friends, FaceTiming my sisters, and then just like moving my body in some way most days. That's, yeah, pretty much it.
Nice. I love New Zealand. I love like the landscape. It's just so pretty there.
Yeah, it's a very, very pretty country.
Do you get time to go back as well?
I mean, with COVID, I haven't been back a lot, but I do. I'm going there in January and I'm going to do like a road trip around the South Island. So that's exciting.
Oh my God, that is exciting. Yeah, thank God COVID travel restrictions are gone. Oh my God.
Finally.
No. So each week on the podcast, we like to ask our guests about a challenge that they have recently faced and how they have managed to overcome it.
Yeah, so a month or so ago, I was walking my dogs and someone actually ran a red light and hit one of them. She was okay, thankfully. But I really struggled with like seeing that happen and kind of, I guess, thinking about how things could have been and how much worse it could have been. And so for a while, I was actually getting flashbacks and really struggling to concentrate and like take myself away from that situation. And I guess I noticed that it was really easy to get frustrated at that response and that it kept coming up, but really focusing on letting myself just feel what I was feeling and process anything I needed to process and making sure I had time, made more time to look after myself and to focus on myself really helped to kind of get through that. So yeah, that's what I would say.
Yeah, definitely. That would be really scary. I have a new puppy and I'm already like so worried. So oh my God, can't even imagine.
Yeah, it's you get so attached to animals.
Oh, beyond attached.
Yeah.
So on the topic of today, we are speaking about body dysmorphic disorder. So what is body dysmorphic disorder?
So body dysmorphic disorder is characterized by a significant preoccupation and dissatisfaction with parts of the body and perceived flaws. So these flaws tend to be either unnoticeable or very minor to other people, but the individual really feels like it's a lot more noticeable than it is. And the preoccupation leads to the individual spending excessive amounts of time worrying about it or checking the area, and also often undergoing procedures that they feel will fix or reduce their concerns.
Oh, wow. I didn't know the procedure aspect was like an element of it. Is there like a side where you are satisfied with the results or you aren't because of body dysmorphia?
So because of body dysmorphia, there's actually, you're pretty much never going to be satisfied with the results. And so it's undergoing several procedures. It's not just, you know, once and then, oh, it didn't work. It's like, no, but this time it will work. And so it can become, yeah, really, you know, it kind of feeds into that dissatisfaction and it just continues along that kind of journey.
Yeah, especially if it's distorted and it's not actually the reality of what you're looking like, it's hard to, yeah, see.
Yeah, exactly.
So what does the evidence show around those who have body dysmorphic disorder?
So there is mixed research on how many people in the population have body dysmorphic disorder, but it's believed to be about 1 to 2%, maybe 2.4% of the general population, which is actually higher than some more well-known disorders like schizophrenia and anorexia. But body dysmorphic disorder is a lot less known to people and, yeah, has only kind of more recently become a topic of a lot more research. The onset is most commonly in the adolescent period. However, if it's left untreated, it can impact people for their whole lives. And there is also mixed research out there on differences between genders, but most of the research does suggest that it's relatively equal between females and males, but the prevalence among females is maybe slightly higher.
Yeah, wow. Do people experience it for like certain periods of time? Because I've kind of heard that thrown around a little bit.
Yeah, so it's definitely something that it's kind of more on a spectrum. So maybe people who are experiencing those body image concerns aren't necessarily meeting the criteria for body dysmorphic disorder. But otherwise, yes, it's treatable and it's something that people can live, you know, can recover from or can live a really normal life when they've got a lot more kind of insight into it. But it's also something that can become very consuming for some people.
Yes, definitely. So then how does body dysmorphic disorder relate to body image?
So body image is defined as the representation that we have of our physical appearance. And so with people with body dysmorphic disorder tend to have a very negative body image, and they'll focus on aspects of their appearance that they're dissatisfied with and then see that as kind of their entire appearance, or that kind of makes up their body image. And so rather than seeing the whole picture, which, yeah, essentially reinforces those negative beliefs that they have about themselves and their body.
And you could be like quite hyper focused on something that other people might not even see, but that's your main focus and drive towards everything that you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. It really magnifies, you know, something that might be so minor or really unnoticeable to someone. These people who struggle with body dysmorphic disorder, it's really magnified to them and in their eyes.
And it might even be like, some people might really like having, let's say, like bigger breasts, but other people might not. So it's also very hard in that sense.
Yeah, exactly. So subjective. But that belief that, you know, I'll only be accepted if I do have these big breasts, and it's just so not accurate when, as you say, everyone has different preferences.
Yeah.
Definitely. Or ideals. Yeah.
So then what are the risk factors for body dysmorphic disorder?
So some of the common risk factors that research has indicated include abuse and negative experiences in childhood, like teasing or bullying. These experiences often lead to low self-esteem or feelings of insecurity. And studies have shown that up to 70% of people who experience body dysmorphic disorder report having some experience of being teased or bullied in childhood. However, obviously not everyone who experiences that will go on to develop body dysmorphic disorder. So there's a number of psychological factors that can make people more susceptible, including like personality type, a lack of coping strategies, negative family environment, and lack of social support. Yeah, research in this area still does have a way to go, and a lot of the studies don't have a very big sample size, but they all do tend to agree it's a combination of these things that contribute to the development of body dysmorphic disorder.
I have even heard from one of the guests, like if a family member or a friend or something comments on something, it can stay with you if you internalize it.
Exactly. It is about internalizing that message and really genuinely believing what they say. And then, yeah, that becomes kind of a belief about yourself. Yeah.
It is, but you don't always have to internalize something like that. You know, a lot of people could call you really pretty, but you might internalize that you don't feel that way, but then somebody else says that you're not, and then you may internalize it. So it really depends on what you internalize, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why some of those other factors really play into it, because if you're teased or bullied and then you have a really supportive family environment, you're a lot less likely to be focusing in on those messages that you're hearing. But if you're hearing it from all those different areas in your life, or you don't have someone to kind of talk about it with, it's a lot more likely that you're going to then internalize that as this is true about me.
But the only opinion that does matter is your own in the end.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
So then what are some triggers for developing body dysmorphic disorder?
So again, there's not a lot out there in terms of triggers, but research has suggested that negative events, particularly in the adolescent period, might be a trigger, as this is a time when individuals are developing their identity and they're more easily influenced by other people's opinions of them. So some sort of negative event during this time would be more likely to influence those negative beliefs about themselves, as we were just talking about. And it's also been suggested that experiences that kind of instill cultural or societal messages about the importance of beauty can also be a trigger.
Yeah, and definitely like your adolescent like cohort. But we do know that most kids will experience adversity in their childhood, because kids can just feel like that. Like a lot of what they say is not, there's no real filter, and it's not always true either. Like they don't have the judgment to make those.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really about that combination of factors that work together to kind of trigger or, you know, for the onset of body dysmorphic disorder. Because as you say, a lot of kids experience that, those negative events and that teasing and bullying. But it's really about that combination.
Yes, definitely. So trying to get the right supports and the right people in your life is important.
Yeah, definitely.
So then what are the symptoms for body dysmorphic disorder?
So some of the most common behavioral symptoms for body dysmorphic disorder include frequent body checking, like mirror use or measuring yourself, constant comparisons to others, excessive grooming, and picking at small or imagined blemishes on the skin, and also seeking reassurance from others. So constantly kind of asking about the way that you look to other people. Emotionally, there tends to be levels of high anxiety and high distress as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So then how is body dysmorphia diagnosed?
So the DSM-5 outlines four diagnostic criteria for a diagnosis of body dysmorphic disorder. These are a preoccupation with one or more perceived defects or flaws in physical appearance that others generally wouldn't notice. B, in response to the appearance concerns, that individual performs repetitive behaviors like excessive grooming, reassurance seeking, or comparisons. C, the preoccupation causes significant distress to the individual or impairment in important areas of functioning like work or school. And the preoccupation is not better explained by the concerns with body fat or weight in those who meet criteria for an eating disorder. So if the concerns are only weight and shape related, an individual wouldn't meet this criteria.
But it can definitely consume your life where you wouldn't have the ability to live normally, which is crazy that that does occur, but it does.
Yeah, absolutely. There was research out there saying some people spend like 8 hours a day engaging in that body checking or all those different kind of behaviors to reduce that anxiety that they feel from that dissatisfaction. So it takes up, like, if we're thinking we're awake for what? How long are we awake? 15 hours a day. It's like half of your day.
Yeah. And I mean, with social media, you can really take it way out of proportion and way further than how social media actually is, like with anything.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's really, complex.
Yes. So then how does internalized beauty standards from the media play a role in body dysmorphia?
So internalized beauty standards play a huge role in body dysmorphic disorder. While not necessarily a cause for the disorder, they can definitely be unhelpful in terms of putting pressure on individuals to feel like they have to look a certain way to be accepted. And, you know, while this can be an issue for many people and something that a lot of people do battle daily, the individuals with body dysmorphic disorder, it can be really exacerbated in that they see themselves through a really negative lens. And so it feels like the only way to even get close to standards is to undergo some of those invasive procedures that I was talking about, or you know, engaging in those different behaviors to really fix the way that they look. And another point is that research has shown that the parts of the body that are scrutinized do differ between genders. So females are more inclined to focus on hips and legs, body weight and skin, and males focus on excess body hair, body build and muscle size. So for each respective gender, that's kind of the areas that society and the media really focus on and tell you needs to be kind of perfect. So I guess that really shows how damaging it can be in perpetuating those beliefs that are present in body dysmorphic disorder.
And it's really interesting that body dysmorphic disorder is equally experienced by both male and female in the research.
Yeah, super interesting. I wouldn't have expected that.
I mean, I can kind of, like, knowing with social media and how that's kind of progressed to be like have that hyper focus on body.
Yeah, definitely.
So then what about social media and taking photos of yourself? How might this impact self-esteem and the engagement in body dysmorphic tendencies?
So recent research has found that the more time people spend looking at selfies, editing photos, and engaging with social media, the higher their body and facial dissatisfaction tends to be. And that's both in adults and adolescents. So obviously social media really creates a platform to be able to do that and spend a lot of time doing that. And so it really does feed into that dissatisfaction. And yeah, social media apps like Snapchat and Instagram have made it really easy to edit and make adjustments to photos, often creating an image that's really unrealistic and is actually a phenomenon called Snapchat dysmorphia, which describes, I hadn't heard of this, people attending cosmetic surgery practices, like showing their selfies that they had edited on Snapchat or something and asking to look like that. And obviously it's physically unattainable in real life, but it's become such a problem that this is really, you know, this is how people want to be seen or how people want to look, are these kind of false images that can be created through social media. Yeah.
I was also reading, like, I saw something on Facebook as well about a girl who got so much plastic surgery to look like Kim Kardashian. I was like,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, social media is really throwing these, like, ideals in people's faces, and people go to extreme lengths to kind of be accepted.
Yeah, I mean, it's also for a really strange reason as well. She just wanted people to say she looked like Kim Kardashian, but it's just, it's, yeah, all of these things sound quite, like, distorted to me.
Yeah, exactly. It really does take over, and these people have really genuine beliefs that that's the only way they're going to be happy and the only way they're going to be accepted. Yeah.
And also with, like, the photo taking, if you're trying to portray a certain ideal that's not authentic to yourself, that can cause, like, a confliction within.
Yeah, and you're never going to meet that kind of bar that you've set for yourself.
Especially if that's not who you are or who you even want to be. It's maybe what you think other people want to see.
Yeah, exactly.
So then what are the complications of body dysmorphic disorder?
So there are a few complications depending on the level of severity. some people, as I mentioned before, spend up to 8 hours a day thinking about and engaging in behaviors related to their concerns. And even if it's not 8 hours a day, a lot of them will spend like 3 to 4 hours. So this doesn't leave a lot of time for other activities, and which is why it's common for individuals to experience reduced capacity to work and maintain relationships, which obviously then feeds into a whole host of, you know, loneliness and depression and kind of social isolation. It's body dysmorphic disorder is also not well understood by some health professionals and plastic surgeons, which means it can go undiagnosed and surgeries or procedures continue to be carried out, which serve to maintain the problem. And as we were talking about before, it never is actually satisfying those kind of desires. And yeah, research has found that as many as 53% of individuals in cosmetic surgery settings meet the diagnostic criteria for body dysmorphic disorder, which is a massive, massive, you know, amount of people who are receiving this surgery or different surgeries. And another complication is limited insight in some individuals. Some people genuinely believe that what they are seeing is what everyone else sees. And so they see that the procedures that they undertake to fix their flaws are completely reasonable and necessary. So it can be really difficult to work to change or challenge those behaviours when there's kind of no motivation to do so.
How do you kind of know the difference though with like body dysmorphic disorder from like being underweight and just having that preoccupation with body weight and shape?
Yeah, so if the preoccupation is only with weight and shape, they won't meet criteria for body dysmorphic disorder, because body dysmorphic disorder is really about kind of all different parts of the body. So like your nose, your hair, like different parts that are unrelated to an eating disorder. But then in terms of how you would differentiate if someone was meeting criteria and was, you know, really underweight, and did need to get back to their healthy weight, or their, you know, what weight their body should be at, professionals wouldn't, you know, diagnose them with body dysmorphic disorder. They would probably wait until they were back to that and see what's kind of resolved in that process, and then I guess revisit the potential for a diagnosis of body dysmorphic disorder.
Wow, yes, that is so interesting. But then how can you treat body dysmorphic disorder, also known as body dysmorphia?
So there has been some research done to suggest that medication might play a helpful role in the treatment of body dysmorphic disorder, but I will speak to the psychological treatment that has been shown to reduce the symptoms. So that is cognitive behavioral therapy. And depending on the presentation, this involves reducing the behaviors that continue to maintain the body dysmorphic disorder. So things like body checking, comparisons, surgical procedures, and then also challenging the underlying beliefs that drive the body dysmorphic disorder. So things like, I won't be accepted unless my nose is smaller, or, you know, those beliefs that they have about themselves that really drives that behavior.
I also have heard from some people that it's not so much about being accepted. I have heard someone on YouTube say that just existing and communicating with people, they feel so bad about themselves that they don't want to be around people.
And so that could be about the belief that they don't deserve to be taking up that space. I mean, generally there would be some level of, you know, I guess it could also be about they feel like the people will judge them in those situations. So maybe not necessarily being accepted, but this person's going to see me and they're going to say these things about me, or this is going to happen. You know, these negative experiences will happen if I go out in public. Does that answer that?
Yeah. And they're probably like comparing themselves to a certain beauty ideal that a lot of people also haven't internalized.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, the level of scrutiny that we have on ourselves compared to what we would have on other people is vastly different. And so that belief, you know, I need to look a certain way to be able to go out, but I'm not necessarily expecting anyone else to look that way. And so it really, you know, they're very kind of contradictory against each other. If you step back and think, well, why do I need to meet that standard when I'm not expecting anyone else to? But it can be really difficult for people to see that.
Yeah, it can also be difficult as well with like the photo taking everywhere you kind of go, where it's kind of like, yeah, you'll have that photo that maybe you may not like.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, yeah, that technology and social media and everything just kind of continues to feed into it.
Mm. But also your perception of what you look like is usually not the reality either.
Yeah.
We're more likely to look at ourselves in all the photos to think if we look nice. But, you know, even people who look good in, let's say, nearly all photos, there'll be photos that they don't like. You
know? Yeah, exactly. And that's, yeah, what I was saying about body image before, it's your representation of how you look. It's not actually what you look like. And so, but it's the belief that everybody sees you in the same light that you do. And yeah, that's a problem for many people. And, you know, it's going back to those beauty ideals, it really is, because that's what society and the media kind of pushes on us, is that you have to look a certain way. And so, yeah, there's that real genuine belief that the way we see ourselves is how everyone else sees us.
Definitely. And it can also be where, like, some people may look a lot different in a photo, like better in a photo, and then some people may not be photogenic, so it's also distorted, and then added editing, there's just all extra components of it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much more kind of going on than just that one photo.
Yes. So what are some practical ways to avoid negative self-evaluation?
So definitely having diversity in the content that you consume. Obviously, as we touched on before, the media can be really good at throwing that beauty ideal in our faces, and it can be really difficult not to get caught up in making comparisons to those people and the bodies that we see. But adding more diversity to our feeds or whatever it is that we're consuming can help to normalize, you know, real people and provide a more realistic representation of what people look like. And it can also be helpful to try and reflect on the body checking or comparisons, which can become really automatic, and taking a step back and asking yourself things like, is this behavior helpful? What am I trying to find out? And can I find that out by doing this? And also, you know, is this going to make me feel good? Sometimes really, yeah, stepping back from the behavior and viewing it more kind of from an outsider's perspective can be really helpful.
Mm. Is there anything for like people who may be like high profile or in the spotlight, like maybe they're on camera or magazines are taking photos of them in a really negative light for like publicity reasons?
Yeah, so there's a lot of people and celebrities and influencers out there that do have that kind of media attention. Definitely, as we were talking about before, I guess having that social support, you know, not necessarily, or trying not to listen to what the media's messages are about how you should look. I mean, I imagine, you know, going to therapy would probably be pretty important in that, in those situations. But yeah, really taking a step back and being able to focus on, I guess, other parts of the situation, trying to look at your body more kind of holistically can be helpful. But yeah, I think that would be a really, really difficult situation to be in.
Yeah, I have heard a lot about it though, because like a lot of people are emerging as influencers, and technology and photos is the new way of presenting everyone. So, you know, if you get the negative comments or the negative photos and then it goes around, like that can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And people, even, you know, the general population on social media really jump on board making those comments and feeding into that. So yeah, I think definitely trying to avoid seeing that amount of kind of scrutiny from people that you don't even know. I imagine that would be, yeah, definitely helpful to try and remove yourself and try not to look at those sorts of comments. But, you know, that's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah, but you're right. I think just ignoring them and focusing on the people who are in your life who do know you rather than,
yeah,
one comment out of 20, or it could be all 20. Like, it's just the media and people will jump on certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not always based in, like, the media is not accurate in any way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So then what can you do to prevent body dysmorphic disorder?
So I guess there's not anything that you can necessarily do to absolutely prevent it. It does tend to be a combination of those factors we were talking about. But a big protective factor, as I was saying before, is social support and talking to people, whether that be a therapist or a friend or a family member. Those triggering events like teasing and bullying do lead to internalizing those negative beliefs and those negative messages that you get from them, and that really drives those body dysmorphic disorder beliefs about oneself. And so being able to open up about those and really trying to kind of get it out rather than internalizing it can be really helpful.
Yeah, it always is unfortunate when you do internalize something, but it's good that you can bring it up and then look at that belief and then, you know, understand.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's really about what you're focusing on, like not focusing in on only the negative things that you're hearing, because then that is what you'll believe.
Yes, but we try not to believe them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So then what is ritual prevention?
So I'll start with explaining what a ritual is. So rituals are the behaviors that someone engages in to attempt to reduce their anxiety. So, for example, looking in a mirror over and over again to check a spot on their face. With rituals, the individual genuinely believes that if they don't engage in this ritual, something bad will happen, like the spot will get really big. So as their anxiety increases, they go back and check the mirror, and then in the short term, the anxiety reduces. And so then that kind of reinforces the belief that the only reason that anxiety reduced was because I went back and checked the mirror. And so that means that every time I feel anxious, I need to go and do that behavior. And so this ritual just continues to maintain that kind of hyper focus on those different areas. What we tend to forget is that when feeling this level of anxiety, that it will eventually reduce. The anxiety will reach a peak and then it will come back down. So ritual prevention or ritual reduction involves the individual learning strategies to avoid or reduce the frequency of their rituals. So for example, this could be delaying mirror use, and then the delay gets longer and longer until it no longer occurs. And so the idea there is that people learn that they can cope with the situation better than they thought they could. And it kind of breaks the circuit of that ritual maintaining the body dysmorphic disorder.
Yeah, definitely. But if you like go out and live your life, the anxiety does decrease and it's usually a lot better and you just don't even notice it. Compared to that focus, then you're thinking about it. But if you just go on with your day and you start doing things, no one probably noticed it.
Yeah, exactly. And as you're saying, it's kind of feeding into that belief that this is going to get worse and become noticeable.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, as you say, if you kind of just don't engage in that checking and just go about doing what you were going to do, that anxiety is actually a lot lower.
Yes. Definitely. So then what is perceptual retraining?
So perceptual retraining is a process that involves essentially retraining the eyes and the brain to see all parts of the body rather than focusing in on the part that's disliked. what we know about mirror checking and body dysmorphic disorder is that it tends to magnify the perceived imperfections and maintain that negative belief. So perceptual retraining involves spending time in front of the mirror, describing yourself objectively and non-judgmentally, and focusing more on the bigger picture. And so then it kind of opens up those neural pathways to see more in the situation rather than really focus in on those bits, those parts that you don't like about yourself.
No, I really like that, like kind of just seeing yourself as a whole person and a whole being, but then focus on experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's like focusing on not just your whole body, but the situation that you're in, and being more present in those situations.
Yeah, I like that. So then what happens if you don't address body dysmorphia?
So if body dysmorphia is not addressed, it tends to get stronger and stronger. Often clients will report they start fixating on more areas, on different areas of their body, and engage in more extreme behaviors to fix their perceived flaws. Studies have indicated also that people with body dysmorphic disorder are less likely to be married, more likely to be divorced, and more likely to be unemployed than the general population. So these results really just show how consuming it can be if left untreated.
Wow. Yeah, I have heard with like intimacy and eating disorders as well that, yeah, people have a certain perception of themselves where they won't have like a romantic partner and they don't want to be touched or anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's definitely an issue for people with body dysmorphic disorder because they believe those things about their body and they don't want anyone to see them. So intimacy can be really, really difficult.
Mm. It can be like really exasperated as well, because I watched a YouTube video where a girl, she was like 30 or something. She just looks like a normal young girl, like very attractive, but she'd never been in a relationship or anything because the body dysmorphia was so distorted that not one person would be able to understand it.
Yeah, and it really just shows how consuming it is and how genuinely, you know, how much people genuinely believe what their mind is telling them, you know, about the fact that, you know, no one will ever love you, or you don't deserve to kind of have people around you, things like that. They're just such genuine beliefs about themselves.
Yeah, and that's why it definitely needs to be addressed. And especially with a therapist, just in general, it definitely needs to be brought up. You know, you don't want to be living with that for a really long time.
Yeah, absolutely. But body dysmorphic disorder, it's so many people have really negative body image. And so, yeah.
Yes. And it can just be triggered by anything. Like even a person who may have a really healthy body image, if you don't have that foundation or that support, you can really just, yeah, internalize things, which you can hopefully filter out yourself. But some people just don't have that filter in itself.
Yeah. Yeah, so true. It's a huge area, especially in eating disorders. Like the amount of clients after they've kind of gotten back to normalizing eating who still have this kind of leftover issue of, I really don't like the way that I look, is massive. So yeah, it's a really important area to talk about.
Yes, but you're definitely right, because I even heard another YouTuber who, you know, shows an amazing life, looks amazing, lives, and then she just still struggles daily with body dysmorphia. Like that must be so, it's just so incomprehensible from an outside perspective. Like, you're just like, oh wow, this person's amazing, like great for months and months, and then they're like, but I don't like my body, and you're like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
It happens. It's such a weird world.
Yeah, definitely. And I think another thing that makes it that's not helpful is that, you know, the way that people would tend to respond to that is, no, you look really good. Yeah. But rather than shifting the focus away from the way that you look, because that's not actually the most important thing. And I think, yeah, definitely that's something we talk about with parents when their child has anorexia, is that, you know, rather than responding by saying you look great, it's there's so many other things about you that are great. You're the way that you look actually isn't that important to us.
If you're experiencing anorexia nervosa, you're probably not able to do all the things to your full potential and explore things in your interests. And
exactly,
if you're focused on looking great, it really depends on what looks great. It's all relative as well.
Yeah exactly. And it's a very distorted view.
It is distorted.
Yeah
there's too much joy to experience.
Exactly.
So do you have any advice that could help someone who may be feeling like they are experiencing body dysmorphia?
So I guess the first point would be to seek help. It can be really difficult. A lot of people have a lot of shame around what they're experiencing, but as I mentioned, it's actually a lot more common than what people would expect. And there is help out there. There can, you know, it can get better. And so, you know, whether it be first to a friend or a family member, but you know, finding professionals who do have experience in that area is really important. But also, as we were saying, trying to be present in experiencing, focusing on other areas of the situation rather than just your body, focusing on the feelings that you have and the activities that you're doing rather than how you look. And a really useful strategy for any client with poor body images is to help them work out the other areas of their life that make them feel good and bring them purpose, and work to expand these areas.
So these could also be kind of used, let's say, if body dysmorphia is like triggered from like an event, like a wedding or something, and then it kind of lasts a few weeks, just to kind of use those.
Yeah, if like that increase in low self-esteem or negative body image, absolutely, because it's really about over-evaluating how important the way you look is. And so finding other areas that are important to you and that you can get, you know, your purpose from. And even thinking through other things that people like about you, because it's likely it's not got anything to do with the way that you look, or very little at least. And so, yeah, reflecting on some of those things can be helpful to expand, you know, how we see ourselves.
Yeah, and that's important for even people without body dysmorphia as well.
Definitely, yeah.
But also even with like people on social media, like you were saying, you don't usually like an influencer if they're rude or mean or like unkind. There's something else you like about them. They might have a really positive motivational attitude. They may provide you like support or support in a sense.
Yeah.
But you're probably not going to look at someone who is like, let's say, hired as a model or something, but just says, I hate people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. There's so much more to a person than the way that they look. And highly likely, as you say, even if it's the person that you find the most attractive, if you don't like them as a person, it's very unlikely that you're going to want to keep them around or keep consuming their content. So, yeah.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for this interview. It's been delightful.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah.
Well, that's the end of today's episode. Please subscribe, leave us a comment or a review. If you would also like to learn more about Body Matters services, you can check out our website at bodymatters.com.au. Thanks for listening.